This is the 24th Sunday after Pentecost. Well, our first lesson today is from 1 Kings 17, beginning with the 8th verse. Then the word of the Lord came to him, "Go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food." So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, "Would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink?" As she was going to get it, he called, "And bring me, please, a piece of bread." "As surely as the Lord your God lives," she replied, "I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." Elijah said to her, "Don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first, make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me, and then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord said, the God of Israel says, the jar of flour will not be used up and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land." She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. This is the word of the Lord. A second lesson is from Hebrews chapter 9, beginning with the 24th verse. For Christ did not enter a sanctuary made with human hands, that was only a copy of the true one. He entered heaven itself, now to appear for us in God's presence. Nor did he enter heaven to offer himself again and again, the way the high priest enters the most holy place every year with blood that is not his own. Otherwise, Christ would have had to suffer many times since the creation of the world. But he has appeared once for all, at the culmination of the ages, to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself. Just as people are destined to die once, and after that to face judgment, so Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many. And he will appear a second time, not to bear sin, but to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. This is the word of the Lord, the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. As he taught, Jesus said, "Watch out for the teachers of the law. They like to walk around in flowing robes and be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. These men will be punished most severely." Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth. But she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." This is the gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Risky. Risky generosity. That's what we see in two places in the gospel, in the lessons this morning. The generosity came from two different women who both happened to be widows. Now, the first was a widow who lived in the vicinity of Zarephath. Zarephath was in the heart of an area that really the worship of Baal came from. And God sent Elijah to Zarephath. Now, this poor widow, she had the fact that she was a widow, she had a son, and she was poor, and all she had left was just a little tiny bit of flour and a little tiny bit of cooking oil. Well, God sent Elijah the prophet to Zarephath and told him that God had a widow waiting there who would feed him daily, who would provide food for him. You see, Elijah, like everyone else, was really living a very difficult life, a tenuous life, because there was a famine in the land. And the famine was there because of something Elijah had done. Elijah had declared to the king that it wouldn't rain on the earth until he said so. Now, a couple of years into that drought, everyone was feeling the effects of the drought. God told, as I said a little bit earlier, God told Elijah to go to Zarephath, but God also told Elijah to pronounce this drought and to pronounce it as a judgment against Israel because of the worship of Baal. The king and the queen, Jezebel, they wanted to capture Elijah, and they wanted to put him to death because of this drought that he had caused. So upon arriving at Zarephath, Elijah notices a woman who's gathering sticks. He calls to the woman and asks her to bring him some water. As she's going, he calls after her and he asks her to also bring a little bread for him, if she would please. Now, what follows gets interesting. You see, she doesn't have any bread. In fact, she tells him that she's only got enough flour and oil to make a small meal for her and her son, one last meal. She's gathering sticks to build enough of a fire to be able to make one last meal for she and her son, after which their intention was to lay down and just simply wait for death. They had no prospects for any money. They had no prospects for any food. And I find what Elijah says in response to be at first rather astounding. He said, "Don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first, make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me, and then make something for yourself and your son." Now, if you stopped right there, this comes across as the most hard-hearted and mean-spirited thing you could possibly imagine. Because basically, thus far, Elijah is saying, "Well, yes, I see your predicament and your plan. And a good plan it is, my dear. But first make me that bread. And then go lay down and die." Really? Really kind of how it comes across, at least at first. And it could come across that way to that woman. But thankfully, that's not where the conversation ends. Elijah continues, "For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land." So, now, it's decision time. She risks everything. She exercises risky generosity. She goes and she makes the bread and serves it to Elijah and discovers that her jar of oil and her container of flour did not run out. In fact, if you go on and read farther, you discover that Elijah stayed with her for an extended period of time in a spare room that she had, and that every day they ate from the provision that God miraculously provided by keeping the supply of oil and flour coming. It was in a way a reenactment of the manna in the wilderness that God provided every single day. Now, what wasn't part of the lesson but quickly comes afterwards, at least in terms of verses. It happened a few, maybe many, many months later. The widow's son dies. She is distraught. She even sort of blames Elijah for his death. Elijah seeks God out about it. He prays that God would return the life of the boy. And he did. Through the power of God, God used Elijah to bring that boy back to life. It was then that something happened in the woman. You see, whether she knew it or not, God was at work in her, giving her faith. After her son was raised from the dead, she said, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord from your mouth is true." Now, she may not have totally believed that Elijah was a prophet before this, despite the daily miracle of the supply of flour and oil. But now she did. However, God had been working in her for some time. For way back at the beginning of this lesson, before Elijah even went to Zarephath, this is what we read. "Then the word of the Lord came to him," came to Elijah, "Go at once to Zarephath, in the region of Sidon, and stay there." See, God was moving Elijah around from place to place, keeping him out of the king's hands. "I have directed a widow there to supply you with food." Now, the widow was this widow we've been talking about. But she didn't know that God had directed her to do that. So way back at the beginning of the story, God was already involved in this woman's life. He had already given her a faith that enabled her to go ahead and trust Elijah's word that if she made him a meal, that God would provide for her and her son throughout the rest of the famine. And there's something here for us to learn. You and I may have friends or relatives that we may think to be a long way off from any kind of relationship with Jesus. But that doesn't mean that God isn't at work in their lives seeking to bring them to faith. And isn't it also true that there are times when we see God at work in someone's life, but they seem oblivious to it? And I'm sure that's what Elijah was seeing. He was seeing that God was at work in this woman. She didn't see it, but he did. And that happened to me too. Like the woman, I didn't see something. Most of you have heard the miraculous basketball story that I've shared, which God used to enable me to see that he was indeed real. But most of you are either not knowing or perhaps not remembering that God had done a bona fide miracle in my life about a year and a half, almost 2 years before the whole basketball thing. It was between my junior and senior year in high school. I worked at an amusement park that was kind of like Six Flags. They had a Western show. And so I was an actor slash stuntman. I got shot off the roof 6 times a day, 6 days a week. Yes, you're probably wondering how many times I fell on my head. Anyway, for all that joy, I got paid $60 a week for 60 hours of work. $1 an hour! My goodness. But one day, I left work and I had a splitting headache. I went home, I called my mom, who was at work at my dad's hardware store. She said, "Well, just go to bed." So I went to bed and I woke up 3 days later in the hospital. For those 3 days, I was in a coma. I had mono. Now, who's ever heard of someone slipping into a coma with mono? Me. Ridiculous, but that was what happened. So, 2 days after I came out of the coma, I opened my eyes. My Aunt Emily's sitting in the corner of the room. Why is my Aunt Emily? What is this room? And the doctor walks in that day, and he says, I'm releasing you. And he said, quote, "The fact that you're getting out of here today is a miracle. Because anybody else whose body has been through what yours has been through would be here at least 2 more weeks. But your vital signs are such that I have no reason to keep you." So that he sprung me. Okay? Now, just like the widow in this story couldn't quite see that God, the God of the Israelites, was the one true God who had raised her son from the dead. Even though God had miraculously provided for her every day, she didn't see it until God raised her son from the dead. She didn't see God at work in all of this. And when the doctor said that to me, it went in one ear and right out the other. It didn't mean a thing to me. I didn't think. About a year and a half later, I learned that the crazy religious mother in our neighborhood that's what all our teenagers thought of her as, is just the crazy Jesus lady. Okay. She had organized a prayer vigil for me that was a round the clock prayer vigil while I was having, mono in a coma. And she was asking people to pray that God would miraculously heal me and that He would use it to work in my life. Well, it was about a year and a half after that that the basketball thing happened that night in my parents' driveway with a basketball and a hoop. But God, I'm sure of it, was using what He had done to start working in my head and in my heart. I didn't consciously think it was a great thing that God had done. But God, I'm sure, used that to start tilling the soil a little bit, right? Friends, all of that is to say, don't give up on the people you know who don't seem to be getting it yet. Don't give up. Jesus is very likely still at work in them. Don't give up. Keep praying for them. Keep sharing Jesus with them. The second widow, who exercised risky faith, is the woman that Jesus observed in the temple that day. We saw it in the gospel lesson. Jesus and His disciples were basically hanging out in the temple one day, which really sounds odd to us, but really was not an odd thing to do. The temple was the center of all of life in Jerusalem. And as they were there, Jesus noticed a number of people, placing offerings into their version of the offering plate. Some of them, wealthy people, put in large sums of money that likely impressed others. But then came this widow. All she put in were 2 little small copper coins, which Mark tells us really amounted to just a couple of pennies. It is then that Jesus made this remarkable statement to His disciples. "I tell you the truth. This poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." It was a teaching moment. It was a teaching moment for Jesus to his disciples, and it's a teaching moment now. You see, it's not the amount. It's the heart behind the amount, whatever the amount happens to be. Jesus isn't putting down those who gave significant sums, but he is pointing out that the woman's heart, the widow's heart, was right and loving toward God. You see, in both instances, the woman who interacted with Elijah and the woman that Jesus commended to his disciples, must be noted that in both cases they were widows. Here's why that's important. Life today for widows is certainly difficult. But life for widows in the Bible times was a great deal more difficult. Today, there is some measure of social safety nets that are in place. But back then, it was hard for widows. Back then, there was no such thing as a safety net. A widow had no sure source of support or income. It was the rare woman who could prosper as a single woman. Society, including the economics of the society, well, it just ran through men. It's just the plain truth of it. If a woman was left a widow, they were very much at the mercy of any relatives they had. If their male relatives, and most importantly, male relatives of their deceased husband, didn't care to provide for her, she was almost certainly consigned to a life of extreme poverty and hunger. So when these two women that we've looked at today, when they did what they did, it very much could be argued that they were practicing risky generosity. The woman at the temple, she put in everything she had. What was she going to buy food with tomorrow? She probably didn't know. We certainly don't know. But she did know this. God was worthy of her faith, her trust, and her adoration. She believed God. She believed in God's provision for her, and she literally gave her all for God. And she has set for us an example. Do we conduct ourselves in a way, or does our giving demonstrate that we, too, consider God to be worthy of our faith, of our trust, and of our adoration? It's a healthy question to ask of ourselves. It is good to review our motivations in our giving. What does our giving say to God about our love for Him? When Jesus looks at our giving, you know, He looked at the widow that day and He looked at all the rich people. And all, you think He can't see what we're giving? When He looks at our giving, what might He say about us? Was it really risky for these women to give in the manner in which they did? Yes, it was. Now, they were able to give this way because God had given them faith. That is true. But at the same time, from a real life, from an earthly perspective, this was risky indeed. And there was someone else who was involved in risky generosity. God has been involved in risky generosity. The New Testament makes it clear. that when Jesus came to the earth as that infant born in Bethlehem's manger, that in the process of becoming human, Philippians tells us that he emptied himself of his divine prerogatives. Yes, he set aside his divine powers and set out to live a sinless life in a very sinful world. What if Satan had been able to get Jesus to slip into sin just once? That's all it would have taken. If Satan had gotten Jesus to sin just once, Jesus would not have been the sinless sacrifice necessary for the washing away of our sins, and he himself would have been lost from heaven. Risky generosity? Absolutely. Absolutely. My friends, give fresh thanks to God today for the risks that Jesus took for you, so that in his generosity, you stand to get today free. Free. And with a future, an eternal future that is oh so worth living. Yes, respond to his generosity with generosity of your own, both toward God and toward others. Yes, may God guide our hearts to live by faith in risky generosity. Amen.